This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290 discussing the Winnipeg Jets. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. I got Ezra Ginsberg with me. I got Dave Minuk with me. We want to hear from you. You can send us your comments at Illegal Curve. That's on Twitter. You can also send us your text messages. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, that's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Micah Blake McCurdy. And Micah is on Twitter. You may have seen him there. He does a lot of great work. @ineffectivemath is his Twitter handle. You can also check out his work at hockeyviz.com. He looks at the game of hockey, provides his analysis with an analytics bent to it. Micah, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm glad to be here. How are you?
We're doing very well, thank you. Appreciate your time this morning. You know, the reason that we brought you on, I mean, obviously multiple reasons, but I have to say I follow you on Twitter, and I was looking at some of your preseason predictions, and you were doing some modeling based on, well, you'll answer what it's based on, but, you know, most of the prognosticators in and around the NHL have the Jets, you know, in that fourth or fifth spot in that North Division, in that Canadian Division. And your model jumped out at me because you had the Jets up there at number two, which is about as high as I've seen them. You have the Jets projected to finish with 64.3 points, a few points behind the Leafs, who are top spot in the North Division, at 67.4 points. I guess sort of a two-part question. Can you explain why you have the Jets so high in your model, and what is used to calculate your projections, and sort of what the inputs are to coming up with what you think is going to happen in the Canadian Division this season?
So the inputs are just what people do on the ice. Everything I do is all taken out of on-ice data. Don't try to guess at what, you know, players would be like based on anything about, you know, how big they are or anything like that. So I'm just looking at observing what happens on the ice with particular players and trying to tease apart what individual players are responsible for. So separating players from their line mates, from their usage by their coaches, from their competition, that's where the hard work comes in. And so once you've got that, if you have rosters of players and you can guess how much they're going to play, and mostly coaches don't like to tinker with ice time too much, so it's not too hard to estimate reasonably well how much people are going to play, you can run simulations of what's going to happen. And so then you can get not only what's most likely, but also a whole range of possibilities. So that 64.3 is an average of all of the different number of point totals that they got in all of the million simulations that I ran.
So, Micah, as you know, last year the Jets struggled mightily on the defensive side of the puck. That's something here in Winnipeg on our show and on this station, and quite frankly, you know, fans and media have been talking about since the qualification round ended last year. You know, when it comes to, you know, shots against, high quality scoring chances against, the Jets struggled. Luckily, they had the Vezina winner in Connor Hellebuyck to be the equalizer. But in terms of this year, what are your projections saying about expected goals against, expected goals for the Jets? Obviously, you know, bringing a guy like Paul Stastny, who's a good defensive center, and, you know, bringing up Derek Forbort in to shore up that defense, that's going to help. So where do the Jets fall in your models in terms of, you know, a very important advanced stats in expected goals for and against?
So those 2 points that you brought up are really important, that they don't look particularly good, and especially at 5-on-5, specifically in those two categories. And those are definitely the most important. That's the foundation of any hockey team, is 5-on-5 play. And so while Stastny helps, and as you mentioned, Hellebuyck, you know, remains, I think, the best goalie in the league, that clearly helps a great deal. But part of why I think my models are a little bit higher on the Jets than they might be, in spite of their defensive weaknesses, is that a lot of what we saw from them defensively last year was bad in a way that does not seem likely to repeat. There's a tendency, maybe this is just humans being the way that they are, there's a tendency to see good luck that happens for your team and say, oh, well, that's just good luck, we won't count on that. But if bad luck happens to your team, especially defensively, say, well, no, that's really their fault. And I take a more agnostic approach where I try to treat both sides of the coin equally. And when you look at that, especially there's a curiosity with the Jets last year specifically, a lot of the bad defensive results were specifically contained to a particular set of three forwards who played a lot with one another, specifically Connor, Laine, and Scheifele, who played almost 2,000 minutes, the three of them. And if you, and so that's one specific combination. And outside of that combination, they were actually very ordinary defensively. And so a lot of what's going on there is, I think, a very poor choice by the coach to put those three together when all three of those players can contribute a great deal more in other combinations. So we haven't seen that combination yet. I mean, it's only been one game. But part of why I think maybe the Jets will overperform in 5-on-5 expected goals in both directions compared to last year is that quirk, where I don't think they'll replicate that same problem where they'll take a specific combination which is really detrimental and run it into the ground.
Well, speaking of combinations, one thing that, you know, folks here are focused on is that third and fourth line for the Jets. And obviously there's some new faces there, but how do you project them? How do you rank them in terms of their effectiveness against the rest of the league?
Reasonably well, I think. I don't think there's anything particularly special. I thought Matthew Perreault, sadly in decline now, and I was sad to see him go on waivers, though I understand that they, you know, that they wanted to keep him, that they weren't dissatisfied with him. But I think they look pretty good, all up. You know, there's lots of teams where the bottom six is a glaring weakness, night in and night out, and that's just not the case with Winnipeg, especially defensively.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Micah Blake McCurdy. You know him on Twitter at Ineffective Math. Does a great job of presenting the game of hockey with an analytic lens, through an analytic lens. You can also find his work online at hockeyviz.com. You know, Micah, here in Winnipeg, you know, the off-season talk was, of course, all about Patrick Laine, the trade request, you know, then, of course, his comments during training camp. And a lot of it, from our perspective, boils down to the fact that he thinks he should be the number one top-line right winger playing with the quote-unquote best centerman in Mark Scheifele. When you look at Patrick Laine's numbers and you look at his offensive and defensive impact and you look at Blake Wheeler's offensive and defensive impact, from your perspective, from your models, which one of those two players is the quote-unquote better right winger?
So I actually find there's a lot of similarity there. They both have the sort of feature where they don't generate a lot of offense, but they're both good at finishing it. Wheeler has a great shot, and Laine is even better. And so that's part of why I actually don't like to see them together. And I was sympathetic to Laine because I think he's an unusual talent, and I think that a lot of, like, that type of player where he doesn't generate much but can finish, you know, that's the kind of player that can be extremely impactful if you can put them in a place where they have lots of opportunities to finish, and you generally need somebody else to do that with. But so I, it's not that I think that he's somehow, you know, big for his britches or anything. It's just that I don't think he gels specifically well on that top line. I think that Laine and Scheifele should probably be separated. Whether it means that you call Laine's line the top line or Scheifele's line the top line, in particular, I think you should have two lines that are constructed differently because they don't fit so well together.
Mike, so I wanted to ask
avoiding
you,
your question about who's the better player,
ahead.
But yeah. Sorry, that's kind of evading, you know, who's better, Laine or Wheeler. I think they fit with Scheifele differently, and Wheeler is a better fit.
Interesting.
Mike, I wanted to ask you about your shot presser biz, because I, along with Drew, follow you on Twitter, and that's something that I'm not as familiar with. So for our listeners who aren't as familiar with that, why, you know, how do you come up with that viz? And also, why is that an important advanced stat? Maybe just, you know, in terms of, you know, not just your typical, you know, shots for, shots against, and shot location. Why is that something that's important for you to present to your audience?
So mostly, I don't think of it so much as important as I think of it as fun. And one of the things that I like to do, and part of why I named my website after Viz, not after anything numeric, is that I like to look at pictures of things. I like to take, you know, numbers are the tool, but the end goal is always something that you can look at where you go, aha! And part of what I wanted to get at was that feeling you get when your team is dominating or when your team is being dominated. And it's fun, you know, sometimes when you just crush your opponent all before you and, you know, you get 80 shots to their 35 and you win 8-0 or something, you know, that tremendous feeling, and you can put that on a graph and it comes across really easily. But I wanted to get more subtly at stuff like, you know, oh, we really scored that goal after we were under siege and our goalie really did all those things for us. And so then you can see it if you make a picture which shows the pressure that, you know, and there's an equal satisfaction to the times they're like, oh, you know, we put them under siege for 4 minutes and finally broke through with the goal. Or you could say, oh, we didn't get a goal there, but we got ourselves a penalty. And so I wanted to get something where you could look at the game and see something that would correspond emotionally to what the game felt like in a way that was true. And so that's why I made the pressure viz the way that I did. And all the technical choices I made, you know, are just technical, and they were all in service of that. You know, how can I make a way that you can look at the game and see who's dominating in a way that's more interesting than just counting?
You know, Michael, one thing we often hear when we're talking to Jets coach Paul Maurice is his talk about internal analytics, their look at the numbers versus what's publicly available. So how do you reconcile those two things? Do you think that there's a big gap between what the teams are looking at, their own internal numbers, and what is publicly available?
So I've never worked for the Jets, but I've worked for a handful of teams in one capacity or another. And the variation from team to team of what they consider important internally can be enormous. And so just based on his comments and how they jive or don't jive with public work like mine, really suggests that whatever they're looking at, and of course you can't know, they're so jelly, like every team, they're very guarded about exactly what it is they're looking at. They're clearly looking at something very, very different. And I don't, you know, there's data that I don't have that I would love to have. You know, there's information about what makes plays challenging and what makes them harmless that I don't have that I would like to get. You know, you can always get better. And so on the one hand, I feel like, you know, maybe they have something that I don't have, but the discrepancies that I'm seeing are so large, and the quantity and quality of shots against is so substantial that it's hard to sort of rationalize your way out of the discrepancy there.
Micah Blake McCurdy covers the NHL through an analytic bent. You can find more of his work online at hockeyviz.com. You can also follow him on Twitter. I highly recommend this, at ineffectivemath. It really provides a great analysis and some great information at looking at the game of hockey through a slightly different lens.
Micah, just quickly, I really want to thank you for coming on. My dad is a retired math professor from the University of Winnipeg, so this is as close as I'll get to a PhD in math. So we really liked having you on.
Mike, appreciate your time this morning.
No worries. Take care.
Thanks, Micah. Take care. All the best to you. There goes Micah Blake McCurdy joining us to talk about his projections of the Jets as the second-best team in the Canadian division. When we come back, we discuss the trade rumors surrounding Pierre-Luc Dubois. The Winnipeg Jets, allegedly one of those teams that are hot and heavy on his trail. We talk about that. Is it a fit? Do you think there's a match there? And what would the Jets have to give up to acquire him? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back. 10 minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. Going to talk about Pierre-Luc Dubois, Columbus Blue Jackets centerman. Had a great breakout playoffs in the bubble last year in Toronto. You'd think the sky is the limit, the future is bright for Pierre-Luc Dubois in Columbus. Well, he's asked for a trade. And I want to play the clip from John Tortorella. Not the clip. This is basically the question in its entirety. He was on the Rothman and Ice show on 97.1 The Fan in Columbus. And they asked him about Pierre-Luc Dubois. And Tortorella was Tortorella. He was brutally honest. And I loved it because you never hear a coach be this honest. So here is John Tortorella talking about Pierre-Luc Dubois from 97.1 The Fan in Columbus.
Yeah, he wants out, and he spoke to the team, as we do here. He spoke to the team. It's a little bit different than Brett and Bob, where this is a 22-year-old kid. Doesn't happen that often, and he has been honest with the group, as honest as I wish he was a little bit more honest as far as reasons why. Still haven't really gotten to that, but I think he needs to speak on that. I won't. To coach him, you know, I can give you a great answer, but it's very difficult for me when a guy doesn't want to be here at such a young age, and the amount of time we've poured into him to try to develop him and is just looking to go, it's hard for me. I'm not sure where it goes with me as the season gets going here. I'll be quite honest with you, because I want to spend my time in developing the people that want to be here. But I still have to coach the hockey team to be the best it can be. Luke has had a good camp. But, you know, it's a short leash with me.
That's John Tortorella. Wow. Brutally honest, wow. If nothing else, talking about Pierre-Luc Dubois.
I bet Jarmo Kekalainen was loving that.
Well, I mean, so obviously that situation seems like it's poisoned. I mean, you compare that with, you know, the situation here. Yeah, can you imagine Paul Maurice coming out and saying that about Patrick Laine or anything along those lines?
It's interesting, though, from the perspective of you're pouring more fuel on the fire.
Totally.
Because the reality is, sure, it was out there. Sure, there was unhappiness. But the reality is that, again, if you didn't bring that up, people would just assume, okay, it's there, but the season begins.
If you blow off the answer, if you talk around it, and I appreciate
it. But he doesn't do that.
He doesn't do that, and I appreciate that. But you have to think, and this feeds into the report from Elliot Friedman and from the TSN Hockey Insiders, that something is going to happen, that this can't be something that be one that they just sort of kick the can until the offseason. Yeah. It seems like something would be more imminent.
Well, based on what he said.
Based on what he said there, that he basically, you know, Tortorella's basically saying, you know, I'm not spending any time worrying about this kid, because I'm going to spend my time as a coach on coaching other players who want to be here,
right.
And Dubois is going to be here, and he's going to play until he's not here, and I'm not going to really waste my time worrying about it. I mean, those comments were pointed, and that's probably the lightest way I can say that.
Yeah.
You don't hear comments from a coach with a disgruntled player like that very often. Now, I just want to read this from Elliot Friedman's 31 Thoughts earlier this week. According to several sources, interested teams are, quote-unquote, not screwing around when it comes to Pierre-Luc Dubois. I'm not sure what path general manager Jarmo Kekalainen is going to walk, but Columbus knows the center is coveted. No one wants to lose out on an opportunity to acquire Dubois because other clubs took the process more seriously. Montreal and Winnipeg are definitely among the pursuers, but there are more, some of whom haven't received much attention. Are the Blue Jackets willing to move this quickly? So let's look at it from the Jets perspective.
Are those other teams willing to move that quickly? Like,
it's always a cat and mouse game when it comes to the...
Okay, take the Jets, though, and Montreal, right, for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, Montreal, you know, obviously is very young up the middle with Nick Suzuki and Jesperi Kotkaniemi is the third-line center right now. And then you've got Philip Deneau, obviously, on that top line with Brendan Gallagher and Thomas Tatar. So right there, I don't see, unless one of those younger centermen is going the other way. Like, Eric Dubois is a bona fide first-line center.
Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Sorry, what did I say?
Eric, his father.
Oh, pardon me.
Who's a very good defenseman.
Yeah. Who's an assistant coach with the Manitoba Moose.
Yeah, so, I meant to say Pierre-Luc Dubois. I guess I'm not fully awake yet, boys. But, you know, when you look at the Jets, same thing. Like, Mark Scheifele is your number one center. Pierre-Luc Dubois is a number one center. Is Paul Stastny then bumped down to the third? Like, there's not as much of an opening, I would say. So, like, I just don't know. Like, everyone, you know, as soon as the Laine and Dubois trade rumors came out.
Well, here's the question I have for you guys. Can you acquire Pierre-Luc Dubois without including Patrick Laine?
Well, you're going to have to include somebody good.
You're going
to really good. And so, yeah, probably not. Like,
if it's not Laine, then you're probably.
If it's not Laine, then who is it? Kyle Connor? Like,
could a package built around Roslovic, who of course is from Columbus,
right.
You know, and he's not the main piece, don't get me wrong. Roslovic, you know, Perfetti, and a first round pick or a first round pick and a second round pick. Would you do that trade? If it cost you Cole Perfetti, would you look into that package in exchange for Pierre-Luc Dubois?
He hasn't even played a game in the NHL yet. Like, he's 18 years old, right?
Well, that's so, what if you knew that you were going to have Mark Scheifele and Pierre-Luc Dubois for the next 5 years.
If you're going up the middle,
Cole Perfetti's a really good young player.
Well, that's the question. And is it?
I wouldn't.
So you're saying
obviously, luckily, I'm not the GM.
So you're
Jets,
saying the untapped potential of Cole Perfetti, because it is untapped, is worse.
It's not just untapped. Drew. Like he hasn't even had.
Right.
He hasn't even tapped.
But
he hasn't even played a game yet, right? Like, we're expecting him to get some games in with the Moose, and then.
But where would you put Dubois among top centermen in the NHL?
Can I answer it this way? Okay. I would love to have Pierre-Luc Dubois. I was talking with our if you remember him, our old friend Richie, and Pierre-Luc Dubois, he was saying Pierre-Luc Dubois is like a young Anže Kopitar.
So if you can acquire a young Andre Kopitar.
So I would love to acquire, I think, you know, you mentioned Montreal, some other teams. I think most teams would love to have a guy like Pierre-Luc Dubois on their team. But, and it's crazy, Dave, because it seems like yesterday we were in Buffalo and Lion A went second and Dubois went third to Columbus, right? But, and we're talking about them possibly being traded. It's weird, but you'd have to give up something very significant. And you mentioned,
Perfetti.
I don't like the idea of trading an 18-year-old, you know, who could be, we don't really know. The ceiling is high, but it could be even higher. Like Perfetti, you watch him in the World Juniors.
You don't know his ceiling and you don't know his floor, whereas for Dubois, he's got the years of experience in the NHL. You're not going to get him at the very affordable entry-level deal contract, which, of course, is a factor for a team that is up against the salary cap. But Dave, I mean, you know, having watched Pierre-Luc Dubois, having seen where he would sort of perform among the best centermen in the NHL, is it worth trading your most recent first-round pick? As he says,
no. 100% it is. And I'll tell you why I think it is. I think it's because this is a Jets team that in a win-now mode. And I think the reality is if you've sold that as your model, and I think the reality is if we're having this conversation and part of the trade is not including Patrick Laine, then I think you do it. I think you do it because we've talked about it. I think you have to do for this team, I think Kevin Cheveldayoff has a window. And I think that window is, you know, with the core. And again, obviously you have to always think about, you know, 5-6 years down the line. But with this core group, I think if you can acquire and have a 1-2 punch like Scheifele and Dubois.
Or probably Dubois than Scheifele, to be perfectly honest.
Regardless. Yes, again, like I said, that's just semantics.
Sure.
But like, I think if you could do that and not subtract Patrick Laine. Now again, the reality for the Jets is you have to figure out cap situation, right? Because, you know, and the one other big factor. Now, obviously, Pierre's father, Eric, is the assistant coach with the Manitoba Moose. We don't know if that would factor in. He's reportedly wanting to go to a bigger market, right? That's part of what we've heard come out of this. So I don't know that Winnipeg is necessarily in that same vein.
I think you also have to look at it, guys. Like, you know, you're talking about Cole Perfetti. Like, the Blue Jackets are trading their best forward,
right?
not one of their best forwards. They're trading their best forward, and the big return is an 18-year-old who is at least a couple of years away, at least a couple of years away from being a first-line center. So if you're Columbus and you make it, this is just a hypothetical trade that there's a 99% chance this never happens, right?
Well, most trades are usually there's more smoke than fire.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's something to think about. Like, if the Blue Jackets are trading with the Jets for Perfetti or a younger player, like maybe Hinola.
Sure.
Like, it doesn't matter. But the point is, the Blue Jackets won't be very good this year. If you take Dubois off of that roster and you don't put a top six forward back, like whether that's Laine, Connor, Wheeler, whoever, You're not going to be a very good team. Like, you're not making the playoffs this year.
No, you're not. You're basically punting on this year, but you have a player who's not happy, doesn't want to be there. You heard what Tortorella said off the top of this segment. You know, his comments were pretty pointed. If you're the Jets or if you're the Habs and you are as interested in acquiring Dubois as Elliot Friedman and others have reported, I mean, it's going to cost you a pretty penny. And the question for the Jets fans or the Jets management is it worth knowing what you have in Dubois having seen him perform at the NHL level and at the age that he is, 22 years old, is that worth, you know, whatever Cole Perfetti might turn into? And you don't yet know what that's going to be.
I think you should also factor in that there's a really good chance, we talked about it last week, with Laine, there's a really good chance, you know, Dubois isn't traded until the end of the season. If you look at, you know, what happened with Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky a couple of years ago, you guys remember, right? We thought they were going to be traded before the trade deadline. They decided to hang on to those guys, and then they swept Tampa Bay in the first round.
Yeah.
As they say, the rest is history, right? So I wouldn't expect, just because John Tortorella made those comments and there's all of this speculation swirling out there on Twitter, I wouldn't, you know, lean towards, you know, Dubois is going to be traded imminently. And just because I said that, he's probably going to be traded later today.
We will keep an eye on that situation, but it is certainly interesting food for thought considering the Jets, according to all the reports there, or at the forefront of teams interested in Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Remember when I picked Todd Richards to be coach of the year back in, yeah. what was that, 2014?
And he was fired 2 weeks into the season. That was a hell of a pick. When we come back, Ian Mendez of The Athletic is going to join us, talk about the Senators. The Jets meet the Senators three times between now and next Saturday. So we talk to Ian about the Sens. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Flying by so far on this Saturday, the 16th of January. Hope you're having a great one. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, alongside Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Dave Minuk. You can reach us here on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Whatever's on your mind, your comments, we want them, we'll read them. You can also do so via text message. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply on our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio. That's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From theathletic.com in the nation's capital, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our friend Ian Mendez. Ian, congratulations first and foremost, I guess, on the new gig. It does sound a little weird to introduce you as from theathletic.com as opposed to being from TSN in Ottawa where you'd been for so many years before. But congratulations nonetheless and welcome back to the program.
Guys, great to be with you here on this Saturday and appreciate that. It's certainly been a change. Listen, I love doing the radio stuff and loved working at TSN Radio in Ottawa, but figured, hey, switch it up a little bit and get a chance to cover the team through a different lens. And hey, listen, after one game, feels like I made a pretty good move because there's finally some excitement around Ottawa here for a change.
You're clearly the secret weapon for the Ottawa Senators. It was a great debut performance on the 2021 season for the Senators. You know, the team that most everyone has picked to be at the bottom of the Canadian Division standing, sort of stuck a thumb in the eye of the big brother Toronto Maple Leafs last night. You know, from my perspective here in Winnipeg, I look at the Senators team and say, yeah, they're not probably a playoff team. But, you know, up and down their lineup, they have professional hockey players. And that, you know, to which they, maybe last year there were too many nights where they just didn't have the horses necessary to compete night in and night out. You know, is that sort of a big aspect of the Senators this year that, you know, they might not have the most talent, but they have professionals up and down their lineup?
Yeah, you know what? That's a really accurate read on the team because if you look at it, like 3 years in a row, guys, they have finished 30th, 31st, and 30th. So no higher than 30th in the last 3 years. And I think a lot of it has been roster related, like, right? And it's always been about the teardown. Who's not here? Stone and Carlson and Pageau and Touris and Duchesne and, you know, like, go through the list, right? It's been stripping it away. And this is the first year where it kind of feels like, wow, they added some pieces in the offseason. Not the least of which is a legitimate, goaltender, at least a guy that, has an impressive resume in Matt Murray, two-time Stanley Cup winning goalie. They added a legit top six forward in Evgeny Dadonov, who he's like sneaky good. And unless you're like, one of these guys or girls that's like in a hockey pool and like, you know, you're in a pool, like you might know about Dadonov that way, but he's not like a guy that's like top of mind for you, but he's had three straight 25 goal years in Florida, but kind of gets overshadowed by Barkov and Huberto down there, but he's been really good. So they add him, they add Timmy Stützle, who's a pretty high-octane, high-energy top three pick, and all of a sudden, just year over year, to your point, it feels like they've upgraded the roster. Like, is it good enough to make the playoffs? Like, probably not, all things being equal, but I think last night, at the very least, showed the Ottawa Senators are not going to be, they're going to be a tough 2 points. They're not going to be the free spot on the bingo card that they might have been in each of the last 3 years.
You know, Ian, you mentioned Tim Stützle there, and, you know, we were talking about him earlier in the show when we were talking about, you know, the upcoming three games versus the Senators, and, you know, if you'd watched the 2021 World Juniors, which I think we all did, you know, some of the moves and some of the goals he was scoring were incredible, and, you know, Jake Sanderson didn't look too bad either, playing for Team USA, winning that gold medal, but just how fun is it going to be to watch Tim Stützle this year? I mean, the expectations are absolutely sky high, and it looks like, you know, this is going to be a centerman for the Senators for, you know, 15 plus years to come.
Well, that's just it, right? Like, I mean, he turned 19 yesterday. So think about it. His 19th birthday was yesterday, and he's making his NHL debut. So it is remarkable. He's got a long kind of track ahead of him, like you said. It's going to be interesting. Like, because as most hockey fans know, in a normal 82-game season, you kind of have to make your decision on a player on the entry level right after they played their ninth game. Do you keep them there and burn a year off the entry level, or do you send them back down to American Hockey League or somewhere else? Stutz is going to be interesting. In the truncated season, that mark comes down to the seven-game mark. They got to make a decision. I'd be shocked if he doesn't stay with the team all year. Like, I just think the uncertainty of the AHL and where you could put this kid, he's best to play here. But there is so much excitement around Timmy Stutzla. And I'm sure it was probably the same amount of excitement that your market had going into that 2016-2017 season when Patrick Laine was the second overall pick and he comes in and you're super jacked up to see what the kid can do. That's what Stutzla is doing coming in here. He was the third overall pick. He's so dynamic. I would say he parachutes in and he might be already the most talented player on this roster. Dadonov might be the guy that's a little bit more seasoned and probably would get the nod that way. But in terms of just skill set, speed, creativity, vision, Timmy Stutzla might be the guy already in Ottawa. So this is going to be a lot of fun. He admitted going into the game yesterday it was going to be a little bit kind of nerve-wracking for him. You could see him gaining a little bit of traction, a little bit of confidence as the game unfolded. He was held off the score sheet, but you could kind of see a little bit of a preview of what this kid could offer. So I think a lot of people are pretty excited to see him play tonight against Toronto.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Ian Mendez of TheAthletic.com in Ottawa. He covers the Senators. The Jets and the Senators will meet in Ottawa on Wednesday and Thursday and back here in Winnipeg next Saturday night as well.
And one of the things that Jets coach Paul Maurice has spoken about is not wanting young players to be on his taxi squad. What is the focus in Ottawa like? Because obviously they had such a good team in Belleville. Last year they were the number one team in the North Division. So is that sort of the same thing? What's the approach going to be with the taxi squad with the Senators?
Well, it's a good question because this is a tricky year, right? Like, and I'm going to use two Ottawa prospects as an example. And I'm one is Logan Brown, who is a guy that they took in the first round 5 years ago in 2016. He was their first round pick. And the other is Eric Brandstrom, who was the centerpiece of the Mark Stone trade. So when Ottawa sent Mark Stone to Vegas a couple of years ago, they got Eric Brandstrom back, and they were super high on him. Neither of those guys are on the opening day roster for Ottawa, but they felt like it was more advantageous for them to get them down to the American Hockey League. And so when that league is up and running, again, everything is kind of fingers crossed. Well, heck, you guys know that in Winnipeg with the news with the Jets today. Everybody knows that everything is a little bit up in the air, but they feel like it's more advantageous for their two prize prospects, Eric Brandstrom and Logan Brown, to get down, in Logan's case, secure the number one spot as a centerman, anchor the power play. In the case of Brandstrom, you play 25 minutes a night down in the AHL. And then at some point, as you know, this season there'll be injuries, there'll be inconsistencies, there'll be COVID cases. There will be a lot of shuffling in and around the roster, so they'll probably get a chance to come up. So the feeling is that taxi squad is a little bit more for like kind of that the kind of bubble guys, the guys that are kind of in their mid-20s that have played a little bit in the NHL but probably are kind of like tweeners. And the AHL is the place for the younger prospects who need to be playing to send them there right now.
Ian Mendez is our guest. Ian covers the Ottawa Senators for TheAthletic.com. You know, Ian, when it comes to the Tkachuk last name, it seems like Big Brother Matthew sucks up a lot more oxygen than Brady does. But Brady had a great start to the season last night with 3 points, a goal, and 2 assists. And he's been remarkably consistent through his first 2 years in the NHL. 45 points in year one, 22 goals, 23 assists. 44 points in year two, 21 goals, 23 assists. What are the hopes for the Senators organization for Brady Tkachuk this season? And what do you think his ceiling is as a player?
I think he's just scratching the surface. I think, and you saw it last night, he has, and it's very much like his brother and it's very much like his dad. It is the ability to kind of, it feels like, kind of be be the heartbeat of your team. And certainly, I think if you looked at the game last night, Brady Tkachuk scored the tying goal. He's the guy that was in the middle of some other things, ended up with 3 points. His ceiling, I think he can be a kind of a 30. I'm thinking he could be a 35-goal scorer in this league. I do, and I think he can be a perennial all-star, and I think he can be the captain of this team for the next decade. And it could be him or Thomas Chabot. They honestly can't go wrong either way. Like, it's a win-win scenario. This guy is a dream. Honestly, like, Brady Tkachuk, you could, for what this organization has gone through in the last couple of years, if you had to build the prototype of the player that you would want and the attributes that you would want to re-engage the fan base, you would put them all down on a piece of paper, and then you would submit that piece of paper, and then the thing would spit out a picture of Brady Tkachuk. Like, this guy is exactly what they need. The curious thing and the interesting thing to watch with Tkachuk this year, the most compelling storyline, guys, would be he's entering. So this is the last year of his entry-level deal. So he's going to need a new contract, and it's going to be fascinating. Does he get, does he get a huge 7-8 year deal? That's what the fans would love. But I think the Matt Barzal situation in Long Island opened up our eyes to the fact that the COVID world has altered the landscape. So the idea that young stars coming out of their ELCs will be able to hit the 6-7-8 year home run deals, I think everyone's going to hit pause. Like, even if they could get Brady at like something similar to Barzal, 3 years, $7 million per, maybe that seems reasonable. But I think that's going to be one of the most fascinating cases to watch unfold. What does Brady Tkachuk's next contract look like? But I'll tell you what, after opening night last night, he's once again establishing himself as the face of this franchise.
And, you know, Ian, I think it's interesting in your answer there. Many of the things that you said about Brady Tkachuk, can apply to Thomas Chabot. Obviously, different positions, forward and defense. But, watching the Senators over the last few years, and we know how good he was, as a junior player in the Q, and, what he did with the Canadian World Junior team. But is he not in a similar situation, even though he's a little bit older? But, is he not just scratching the surface? And do you think that maybe people outside of Ottawa, you obviously, have covered the Senators for a long time. Thomas Chabot just as well as anybody. But, is this a year maybe that he takes even another step? Because, he's already taken such huge steps, in his career already as a 23-year-old. Some people think he might even be as good as a top 10 defenseman in the league, and I probably wouldn't argue with them.
Well, it's going to be interesting because we just talked about Brady Tkachuk needing a long-term or a contract extension. Thomas Chabot got one last year, and this is year one of an 8-year, $64 million deal. So, yeah, I think there is there's an implied pressure, an expectation for this young man to elevate his game. And that's not to say that he can't or he won't, but I think there is some expectations that he will grow a little bit. Man, he is so much fun to watch. Like, he is smooth. He's calm. He scored a terrific power play goal last night to open up the scoring for Ottawa. He played, and I don't have the number in front of me. I want to say he played about 27 minutes somewhere in that ballpark last night. That's going to be one of the interesting things. Last year, guys, and this will paint the picture of how thin Ottawa's defense was last season. Thomas Chabot had 11 games last year where he played 30 minutes or more. The next closest defenseman in the entire league, I think it was Brent Burns in San Jose and Oscar Klefbom in Edmonton, was the next closest. They had 3 games where they played 30 minutes. So think about that. Like, this guy played 11 games of 30 minutes, and the next closest defenseman was at 3. They need to bring that number down. Like, they can't just run this guy out for half a game and then kind of, put 4 or 5 other defensemen out there and hope that it works. Like, you got to manage his minutes. Like, Thomas told me this week, 25 minutes is like his sweet spot. That's what he played a little bit more than that last night. But he has the ability to control the pace and tempo of a game. He's so much fun to watch, and I look at this. He's an alternate captain. Brady's an alternate captain this year. It's almost like it's up for grabs who wants to be the captain. And I said it before, I'll say it again. They can't go wrong. They legitimately could not go wrong with either guy to be the captain of this team.
Ian Mendez covers the Ottawa Senators for TheAthletic.com. The Jets into Ottawa Wednesday and Thursday next week, and then Ottawa into Winnipeg on Saturday night. Ian Mendez will have it all for you, covering the Senators' perspective. Ian, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, you bet. You guys enjoy the games tonight, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
Take care, Ian. Thanks so much. When we come back, we're going to give some predictions of our own about this 2021 season. Much more to come. Jets talk still. Lots more. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
53 seconds to go in the Avs power play chance. McKinnon breaking down the slot. McKinnon shoots and scores! McKinnon just outraced everybody to the front of the cage and rips it past the glove of Uso for his first goal of the season.
Everyone's got high expectations for Nathan McKinnon of the Colorado Avalanche this season. Don't know if you saw what the Avs did last night.
8-0.
Shellacking the St. Louis Blues by an 8-0 margin, going 6-for-7 on the power play.
Yeah, that was insane.
Which is absolutely incredible. We'll talk about some of our predictions for the upcoming 2021 season this segment, but first let's check out the Odd Shark inbox presented by Odd Shark, your source for the latest odds from leading authorities. Find your edge at oddshark.net. We were asking you for your comments about the deployment of the Jets lines and defense through the first game. Here's a comment from Steven. Steven says, Perreault scares me. Matthew Perreault scares me every time he's on the ice. I'm just waiting for him to take a bad penalty. Would love to see a young player in his spot to learn off two veteran line mates. Ian says, fans saying that the Jets can't afford to keep line A. Isn't it more that they can't afford to have all six forwards on the top two lines? Pair them up across three lines and the math makes more sense. With ELCs and league minimums, bottom six scoring now would not be a problem. So Ian is saying, share the wealth a little bit more among the Jets forward group. And G. Diddy says, get Ehlers onto the power play one. I agree with you. Wheeler obviously got told to shoot more, but put Ehlers there instead. Have him shoot, set up line A, create chaos, at least until Cole Perfetti can take over. Plus, then we have a chance at zone entry that doesn't involve playing Plinko around the boards. A lot of great comments coming in. Somebody asking via text, is Hanifin, Noah Hanifin, going to hear from the NHL Department of Player Safety because of the cross-check on Connor? Well, if he hasn't heard from them yet, he's not going to, so you can put that possibility to bed.
Can we talk about that for a second?
Sure, but let me just do the extra here. Facebook and Instagram posts, your text, your tweets. We find them in the Odd Shark inbox. And remember, oddshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Find your edge at oddshark.net. Yes, Ezzy.
Yeah, I think there's an argument that that should have been or could have been a one or two game suspension, but you know, watching that game, should that not have been a major?
Should have been a major. There's no question it should have been a major. You know, if it's a major, then you probably don't need any supplemental discipline. I thought that because they missed it on the major, maybe they'd give him a game or at least give him a fine, which obviously doesn't do anything for these guys, but, you know, it's optics more than anything. I'm a little surprised that it sort of just ended with that two-minute minor, and that was the sum total of the incident. But I don't necessarily disagree with you there, Mr. Ginsburg. Okay, let's get to some predictions for the 2021 season. We sort of touched on this last week, but it was a little chaotic, so let's revisit it.
Okay.
Your four division champions, please. We'll start with you, Ezzy. Your four teams, who's going to win the respective divisions?
Yeah, I had to open up my notes here on my iPhone because I, you know, I'd forget otherwise. Yeah, if you listened to the show last week, you know that I had the Toronto Maple Leafs winning the North Division, big shocker, and I had Washington winning the East Division, which is not too much of a reach either. I've got Tampa Bay winning the Central, which is just weird to say, and then I've got Colorado winning the Pacific.
Dave, your four teams.
I've got Tampa, Philadelphia, Toronto, and Colorado.
There you go. So
that was obviously based on Philly beating Pittsburgh twice in a row.
No, I actually think Philly's going to be my Stanley Cup pick this year.
Well, then let's get right into that. Your Stanley Cup finalist.
Unless Bernie
now.
Perron's going to be in net. I don't know if that's just kidding.
Well, Carter Hart's pretty damn good.
You know I like Carter Hart. I'm kidding.
Well, since I already started, I'll finish mine off.
Yes,
I
please.
Had Philly in the East. I think it's still called the East. And I've got Colorado coming out of the West.
Fair enough. Those are two very reasonable picks. I'm not going to say chalk, but very
reasonable.
Whoa.
I would say Philly's.
Philly's not
quite. Colorado
chalk.
Is, but I mean, yeah. It's hard to argue with how good that team is.
Yeah, the only question for Colorado to me is goaltending, and that yeah. You know will obviously play itself
and,
out.
And I mean, they do call Travis Konecny the London rifle.
Ezzy, your Stanley Cup finalists?
We're going right into what order is this here? Like, I mean,
the order that's in the show plan.
That's in the show plan.
Let's just get a little like slow down a little bit here, Drew. I'm just kidding. I've got it written.
It's literally
down.
Written right in front.
Okay, so right off the bat, I mean, too many people. Like, if you look at NHL.com, every single writer took Colorado. So, I mean, I was high on Colorado a couple of years ago, so it's kind of easy to pick Colorado. Yeah. So let me just preface that by saying I'm specifically not picking Colorado because I think too many people are already picking Colorado.
So you're picking them to be a contrarian. Not picking them to be a contrarian.
I think there's a good – exactly. Okay. I think Colorado, I do think, has a really good shot at winning the Stanley Cup, even though, you know, once the playoffs start, everything seems to be thrown out the window. I'm taking Vegas to win the Stanley Cup, and wow. my other Stanley Cup finalist is Montreal.
Well, there you go. And
wow,
there you go. Vegas and Montreal, the battle.
I have Colorado winning, for the record.
You have Colorado winning. Yeah. Okay, then let's get to
that's original.
Art Ross Trophy, the most points.
Yeah, no shocker here. It's going to be either Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl. I'm going with McJesus.
Dave,
yeah,
I'm sure you just offended a large portion of our audience, but that's great.
I'll go with McDavid as well.
There you go. Thank you for calling him McDavid there. The Rocket Richard Trophy for the most goals in the NHL this season.
Yeah, I wanted to go bold and maybe pick Patrick Laine or Austin Matthews. I think Sebastian Aho is going to be right up there as well, but I'm going with the grade eight.
Alexander Ovechkin.
I'm going Patrick Laine.
Dave's going bold there.
I think this will be his year.
You think this is the year? Well, you know what? He certainly started off with a bit of a bang. The Hart Trophy, most valuable player in the NHL.
Yeah, as you guys know, I picked Nathan MacKinnon last year, and he finished second. So I will be going with Nathan MacKinnon again this year, and he will win.
Okay.
I got nothing on that one. That would be my pick as well.
Fair enough. Your Vezina Trophy winner for the top goaltender in the NHL.
Yeah, It's almost like finding reasons not to pick Connor Hellebuck as opposed to just taking Connor Hellebuck. You know, I do think Robin Lehner is someone who I considered. You know, I do think Andrei Vasilevskiy is a little bit overrated considering the team that he does play on. But I will take number 37.
David?
If I don't disagree with Ez, I'm just going to go with Ez.
You're just going to give me a thumbs up if you agree with Ez.
Well, it won't really help our listeners if I give
a
thumbs up.
But exactly. It is a radio show. There's not a lot of a visual element to the show.
Yeah. I would say as a dark horse, I do think Carey Price is going to be in the conversation.
Well, I mean, Carey Price is a pretty damn good goaltender. I would agree with that. Norris Trophy for top defenseman in the NHL.
Yeah, you know, Cale Makar and Miro Heiskanen are two guys that I really thought about. I still think they're maybe a couple of years away, but I do think Makar and Heiskanen will be in that conversation. Victor Hedman, you know, is always going to be there. I mean, John Carlson is another guy. I'm going to go Alex Pietrangelo. You guys know how much I like Pietrangelo. I believe he was fourth in voting, if I'm not mistaken, last year. But playing in Vegas, you guys know I'm very high on Vegas. So I will take Pietrangelo.
High on Vegas and high in Vegas previously. Dave, Calder Trophy winner.
Oh, I'm going with Seth Jones.
Who did Dave take for the Norris?
Sorry, a Norris Trophy. That's
I knew what he was talking about. It's Seth Jones.
Seth Jones for the Norris.
That was who I took last year. Like it.
Well, you know what? We've seen this kid develop, and he's just such a stud. And he doesn't get the recognition based on the market he's in.
100%.
But I think this kid is absolutely lights out.
He's going to be a UFA pretty soon.
Calder Trophy. I misspoke before. This is the Calder Trophy one.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting year. Timmy Stützle is going to be my pick on Ottawa. I mean, I just loved what he did in the World Juniors. He's going to get so many opportunities in Ottawa. And, you know, just talking to Ian Mendez last segment, you know, we're going to get to watch him. How many times do they play the Jets? 45 times this year. So we're going to get a lot of opportunities to see the big German. So I'm going to go Timmy Stützle. But it's a good field.
Dave, Calder Trophy for you?
Yeah, I like Stützle as well.
Okay, you guys are a lot of agreeing going on
Shesterkin,
here.
Shesterkin is another guy I was going to throw in there.
A lot of agreeing that you should probably be concerned about. Dave,
I know. I'm reflecting as we go through this.
Jack Adams Trophy for Coach of the Year.
Yeah, it was one of the harder ones to predict at the beginning of the season.
Sure.
These all are. I'm going to go Rod Brind'Amour on Carolina. Rod the Bod, yeah.
David?
Well, I was thinking actually about Brind'Amour, but now that as he's picked him, and because of your previous comment, now I can't pick Brind'Amour. I'm going to go with Jared Bednar.
Jared Bednar out of Colorado. Okay. That makes sense in keeping with the rest of your picks. And this one, because I know it just bothers Ezra on a daily basis. You're not doing. Dave's sitting this one out.
Absolutely not. Like, it's such a stupid. It's such a stupid award.
The general manager of the year. You don't even have to give an answer. It's a little silly.
It doesn't bother me. I'm going to go Kelly McCrimmon in Vegas. I like the moves that he made in the offseason, massaging the salary cap, not literally, figuratively. And, you know, I think another guy just just the way he somehow managed to get under the salary cap without trading anybody in his top nine. I think Julian Breezeball is probably going to be in that conversation too.
When we come back, Connor McDavid's agent says that the abuse that star players take in the NHL is hard to watch. Does he have a point? Is this something the NHL should look into fixing? We talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
That's fine. I just got kind of caught in a weird spot. I mean, I think you always want to protect the players. I mean, I guess the guys, you know, they have a right to defend the net and obviously, you know, create that body position and stuff. But, you know, I think you just kind of have to find that happy medium. And, you know, as far as the penalties and refereeing goes, you just got to, you know, kind of stay consistent.
That's Austin Matthews of the Toronto Maple Leafs talking about the cross checks to the back, which are now apparently a big problem in the NHL because some of the star players, Matthews was getting beat up a little bit by Shea Weber on the opening night, Wednesday night, in their in the Habs.
Ben Chiarot, too.
Yeah, well, Ben Chiarot, exactly. They were giving.
That's one of the reasons why Wayne Simmonds and him dropped the gloves.
They were laying some lumber. And so here's the tweet from Connor McDavid's agent. The same firm also represents Austin Matthews. His name is Jeff Jackson. Great to see NHL hockey back last night. Such amazing athletes and so much speed and skill in the game now. But watching the abuse that star players take is hard to watch. Felt like the 80s with the cross checks in the back and the hacking and slashing. The NFL protects quarterbacks. Why doesn't the NHL? You know, I think he's got an interesting point. And, you know, some people would say, well, you can't have two tiers of justice. You can't call the game differently for the superstars than you can the regular players. And in the NFL, they certainly do. They do protect quarterbacks. They do everything in their power to make sure that, you know, if you're going to lay a hit on a quarterback, it has to be absolutely perfect. It has to be so clean that you can't even conceivably find a way that for it to be a penalty. Whereas in the NHL, you can basically treat Connor McDavid, treat Mark Scheifele, treat Austin Matthews like you could your average fourth line player, and that's no disrespect intended. So should there almost be, obviously you can't have it be explicit, but should there almost be two tiers of justice in the NHL?
Well, you just want to see consistency, right? Like, regardless if Connor McDavid is cross-checked or if it's, you know, Kyle Turris. I'm just using a random,
player.
On the Oilers. But, you know, if you watch that game between Toronto and Montreal, and I did, and it was actually a great game with the Leafs winning in overtime, you know, it was towards the end of the third period that if you watch, Shea Weber and Ben Chiarot, who are D partners, Weber comes in and gives Matthews a pretty solid cross check. Mm-hmm, you guys know Weber's a big boy, and so is Ben Chiarot, but then Weber moves to a different position, and then Chiarot comes in and gives him the lumber.
Mm-hmm.
It probably should have been a penalty. Some of the veteran defensemen like Weber and Chiarot maybe get away with that, and maybe because it's the end of the third period, the refs decide, okay, well, you know, that didn't have any impact on the play, we're not going to call it. But certainly, you know, you watch, and Sidney Crosby, guys, is someone, I think, since he's come into the league, 2005, 2006, I think there's no better example of a player who takes abuse on a regular basis, and he's managed to incorporate it in part of his game and realize that because of the type of player he is, he knows he's going to be targeted. But no, absolutely, Drew.
Well,
NHL has, you know, I just wanted to say the NHL definitely, I think, has to be aware of this and do a better job of protecting their star players. And this is week one, game two of the season. And you're seeing, you know, and we're not just talking about, you know, star players. We're talking about the upper echelon star players. Mm-hmm. Like McDavid and Matthews are arguably, you know, two of the best players, top five players in the league.
The players that an average fan, a casual hockey fan, would pay money to see.
Yep.
You know, the guys who are really, you know, contributing a huge amount to the revenue of the league simply by their performance. And this isn't a new phenomenon. You remember that when Mario Lemieux retired the first time, a lot of it had to do with, well, certainly the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, his cancer diagnosis, but he was also sick and tired of the abuse that he was taking on a night-in, night-out basis. You know, you hit somebody in the back or you hit somebody in the legs with a big piece of wood, it's going to hurt. And so that, you know, impacted Mario going back, you know, what, 2 decades ago, almost 3 decades ago now, you know, give or take. And you know, the same problem continues to rear its ugly head, Dave.
Yeah, I think there's no question about it. I don't think you can have two tiers of justice. I think that, especially if you think about it, a lot of this is happening sometimes away from the play. So the refs aren't necessarily watching what's happening. I think, to Ezzie's point, I think it's about finding that level of consistency. And look, at the end of the day, you don't want these players out. So if you're going to allow a certain level of hitting, allow it. But if it crosses the line to, you know, effectively trying like to look like it's going to injure a player.
Using your stick for as a weapon as opposed to as a tool.
Right. And so I think there becomes that balancing act. But I guess if you're the NHL, is it a lot more important for you to have guys like Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid at 100%, you know, and being on display, doing what they do? I mean, the reality is fans like goals.
Mm-hmm.
Fans like action.
That's why I think this year is going to be, I mean, so far, the first 3 games into the season,
right,
you've seen nothing but offense, especially in the North Division, that's made these games tremendously fun.
Absolutely. And I think, and it's funny because I think I tweeted that during the Jets game. I was like, this is not going to be a defensive gem.
Well, which is, again, going back to what Eric DeHatchick told me last week, saying that he thought the offense is going to outpace the defense by such a significant margin that it's more important to have top flight offensive talent than
right.
it is to have top flight goaltending.
So I think it's, I do think it's important. I think you have to protect the people in this game that are attracting the eyes, because no more than like this year is it ever going to be more important to have all eyes on your product. And so if you lose that star power, mm-hmm. if Austin Matthews gets hurt because of a cross check, you know, I mean, again,
Wednesday night's game between the Leafs and the Habs, was that an aberration, or is that sort of the rule? I mean, from my perspective, some of the cross checks that you know Weber and Sherratt were laying on Matthews were clear penalties, and I think the officials had a bad night. I mean, I don't know that, you know, on a night in, night out basis, those kind of cross checks are
right.
going uncalled.
No, I agree.
You know, maybe, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, prior to that first lockout.
Yeah.
Maybe that was the sort of the standard of officiating, but I think it's changed since then.
Yeah. Well, what about, I mean, you guys saw, you know, Sammy Blaze hit on Devon Taves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On the Avalanche. He was suspended 2 games. Like, that was a really dirty hit that I think, you know, some people thought maybe Blaze would get 5 games. Or even, I saw on Twitter, some people thought 10.
It was a prototypical picking of the head with an elbow.
That is the type of hit, Drew, that can easily concuss a player.
Sure.
Or, as you like to say, you know, can lead to brain damage, which is what essentially a concussion is. And that was the first game of the season. And, you know, when you see a guy only suspended for a couple of games,
right.
it seems like we've been doing, you know, the show for almost 12 years now. It seems like we talk about it every year, you know, the NHL Department of Player Safety, you know, Kyle Connor getting hit by Noah Hanifin there, that could have easily been a game or two.
Mm-hmm.
And the NHL Department of Player Safety, I don't even know if they, you know, tweeted anything out about that,
they or
if they even looked at it.
Yeah, they didn't. I'm sure they may have.
The Jets sent it in. You got to think, you know, the coaching staff would have sent that in.
I'm sure the Jets clipped it and sent it and said, hey, you know, what's going on with that? But the Department of Player Safety clearly ruled
like,
that it wasn't deserving of anything
and
else.
That's a hit from the head. Pardon me, hit from behind all day long. Like that's a dirty hit.
I'm not saying
Hanifin should have got 5 games. I'm just saying that, you know, that could have easily been a suspendable offense.
Sometimes the hits from behind are as a result of the player at the last minute sort of turning into the defender.
Yep.
That wasn't one of those.
Right. And what I'm saying is, like, I think all of this, you know, can be, it's all relatable, right? Like, the cross checks that, you know, some of these big defensemen give star players in front of the net, or maybe, you know, you see a slew foot or a hit up against the glass. I mean, it's all something that you have to factor in. It's a microcosm.
Mm-hmm.
Each one of these plays is a microcosm of the game itself. And you're right. I mean, back in 2005, 2006, Drew, I mean, there was a crackdown on not only the clutching and the grabbing.
Stick infractions.
Exactly, stick infractions. And then later you had, you know, hits to the head and everything like that. But absolutely, I don't think that you're going to see, you know, star players like Austin Matthews face that kind of punishment and get those big cross checks on a nightly basis that are uncalled. But absolutely, I don't know who the refs were in that particular game, but, you know, I think they would look back on that game and they review
Yeah, their performance.
They review their performance. I think they would have said, yeah, you know, Shea Weber and Ben Sherratt probably got away with one there.
No question about it. This segment, this discussion about the protecting the stars and the use of cross-checking in front of the net is brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Although there's nothing funny about taking a cross-check in the back, there's a lot funny about Rumors, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. Big thanks to everybody, and there were tons of people who tuned in last night. Rumors doing another one of their Zoom comedy nights. Last night's performance was free of charge. There were people tuning in on Zoom. There were people tuning in via YouTube. However you watched it, Rumors hopes you enjoyed it, and stay tuned for more information on the next Zoom comedy night brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For more information, find them online at rumorscomedyclub.com. When we come back, we have some great Zoom interview clips for you. Speaking of Zoom, we have some great Jets talk. We'll give you an update on why the Jets aren't practicing tonight, in case you missed that. Much more to come. One final segment to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
I'm excited about it. Yeah. I have never skated on a lake my entire life.
We're not skating on a lake, though.
Huh?
It's not on the lake.
It's not on a lake?
No, it's beside lake.
No!
Yeah.
I thought it was on Lake Tao.
We're playing on the 18th fairway, bro.
No! I didn't even know.
You can take it.
For real? Oh, you just crushed my dreams.
poor Pierre-Edward Belmar having his dreams crushed. by his colleague Andre Burakovsky earlier this week. I thought that was a great clip. I just had fun with it. The poor guy. He was so excited to play a game on Lake Tahoe, not realizing they're actually building a rink on the 18th fairway of a golf course in Lake Tahoe. Beside Lake Tahoe. I know. I've actually been to that resort. It's quite nice. They'll enjoy themselves there. But that's neither here nor there, I suppose, right?
You've been to Lake Tahoe?
I have been to Lake Tahoe.
Nice?
Drew's doing what we call a humble brag.
It is a bit of a humble brag.
Was Sebastian Aho in Lake Tahoe?
Because of rhymes? No, he wasn't. But it actually had nothing to do with me. My wife was on a conference. I came along as the leech that I am. So
did he go skiing
enjoyable.
Or canoeing or something?
I went upright paddleboarding. But then a different time I went whitewater rafting, and that was in Vail. That was also quite fun. I enjoyed that quite a lot. But
tax dollars at work.
No, there's nothing to do with tax dollars. I paid for my own way there. Thank you, David. It's Drew Mandel dollars at work. It has nothing to do with tax dollars. But, you know, keep that in mind there next time. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We got one final segment for you on this Saturday morning. A reminder, you got NFL football action all weekend long here on TSN Radio 1290. We're down to the final eight teams. So we got the, who do we have? We got the Bills and the Ravens. We got the Chiefs and the Browns. We have the Packers and the Rams, and we have the old man battle, the Saints and the Buccaneers, today, later this afternoon, and tonight, and then tomorrow as well, NFL football all weekend long here on TSN Radio 1290. Got to play this clip from yesterday, another Zoom interview gone wrong. Jake Voracek, he unleashed a double-barreled attack on a Philadelphia columnist. Here's what Jake Voracek had to say.
This is for Jake. Two games in, Jake, how different does the season feel, if at all, given the circumstances of the off season and the condensed schedule and everything?
Doesn't matter what I say, Mike. You're gonna write every time. No, so it doesn't matter what you say. Yeah, it feels different. I mean, we got 4 points after the first two games. I wasn't even gonna answer your question because you are such a weasel. It's not even funny. Next question.
Jake Voracek. Wow, he's in mid-season form right there. I mean, obviously a little bit of bad blood between Jake Voracek and that Philadelphia Inquirer columnist there, but that just came out of nowhere. You think the Flyers are flying high. You win a couple games against the Pittsburgh Penguins to start the year, but boy, Voracek obviously does not like that columnist and certainly let him know about it in no uncertain terms there.
And now it's been written about now on several, news outlets. The writer is Philly Inquirer's Mike Sielski. I'm not sure what he said. I don't know if we know what he said about Jake Voracek.
So I looked into it. It had to do with a column from last year where he basically, I think he wrote it poorly.
About Giroux and Voracek.
Indicating that Giroux and Voracek were laughing at head coach Alain Vigneault. And I think it was poorly written and obviously unappreciated by Voracek. And I guess he's been waiting, lying in wait for months on end now before having the opportunity to lash out. And lash out he did last night. So some of the entertaining Zoom calls this week.
And it's like you mentioned, right, guys? Like, you know, Dave said earlier, you know, he's picking the Flyers to go all the way this year. And, you know, they start off the season with two big wins over Pittsburgh. And you're right, Drew. Like, this obviously blew up on Twitter. And as you mentioned, you know, it has to do with something that was written about Voracek and Giroux, you know, in the past. But it's unbelievable that, you know, he still remembers that. And obviously, like you said, it's something that he was hanging on to and he had to get off of his chest. It's hilarious. I think we're going to be playing that clip many more times on this show.
Anytime one of us says something wrong, we'll just go call each other a weasel and play that as a clip. All righty, let's wrap it up. We got cheers and jeers to finish off the show on this Saturday morning.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
I'll start with Mr. Ginsburg. Cheer or jeer?
Yeah, I'm gonna go two jeers. Now that we played that Jake Voracek clip, I'm gonna give Patrick Laine a cheer just because of everything that was going on prior to training camp and answering, you know, those tough questions and everything like that. He goes out there and he pops in two G's, including one in overtime. And I'm also gonna give a cheer to Travis Konecny, who sat there beside Jake Voracek and managed to not laugh when Jake Voracek gave that answer. So I'm gonna give Konecny one too.
As his streak of only cheering continues unabated for the 432nd straight time. Dave, cheer or jeer?
I'm going to go with a cheer. I'm going to cheer the healthcare workers, all the frontline workers, and all the folks who were making it possible to be at Bell MTS Place on Thursday night for the Jets game, because, you know what, there was a lot of attention to detail and making sure that, you know, the media, the players, and they're the people who really are unheralded, don't get the recognition. So shout out to all of them.
I'm going to give one final quick jeer here to Mr. Moneyphone himself, Evander Kane. Files for bankruptcy with $26.8 million in liabilities. I'm not even sure how you do that. Apparently, young money, cash money, not billionaire, but bankruptcy for Mr. Kane there. That's it for the Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Big thank you to our guests, Ian Mendez. We were joined by Micah Blake McCurdy, Jeff Hamilton, and back in hour number one, David Alter. In case you missed any of the show, it's available on tsn1290.ca, on illegalcurve.com, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us, let us know what you think of the program. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Big props to producer Sean back at the station. For Ezra Ginsburg, for Dave Manouk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.